Okay, it's been a while since we did the last piece. The truth is, in my avelos for my father, Harini Kaparis Meshkavo, I would say I've recorded now 4 lessons from my father. I would say 50% of it is chinuch. So, but I'm sort of keeping the 2 shiurim separate. In other words, maybe we'll make reference to certain things, but there's a lot there in what I spoke about my father that's chinuch related. But I'll keep with the curriculum that I've prepared in the past. So it's now, I guess, more than a month ago, way more than a month ago, we spoke about the metaphor that Rav Volbi Zatzal uses, that Rav Volbi describes the ikar, the primary part of chinuch is the planting, and we spoke about the son as being the love that a parent gives, and what we're going to discuss today is not the love primarily, but we're going to talk about preparing the ground that's appropriate growth for children. I just want to emphasize a couple more things about the son, which is the love and the building or the nurture that parents give for the children. And that is something that we spoke about on the first page. I think we already photocopied this page, Yud Ches and Yud Tes. We spoke about from Rav Volbi the idea that Ein Yelad Dome L'Chavero. And I encourage everybody to read over how he describes Chanoch L'Nar Al Pi Darko. So the love and the affection and the warmth that a parent is going to be giving to a child really very much might depend from child to child based on the child's Kochos HaNefesh. I'll give you an example. In my notes over here, I couldn't even figure out what I was writing. I wrote child in quotes. And then I realized I had written my son's name, my 24-year-old son, and I decided he was too young for me to name him. So I wrote child in quotes. I realized I was talking about my oldest son, Menachem. I think he's now totally comfortable that he's now 24 years old, Bli Ayin Hara. I think his birthday is today or tomorrow, something like that. So he's comfortable, I think, now that I talk about him. Menachem was a very, very rambunctious kid. He was, and the irony is that my present son, Menachem's already our adult child, my present, adolescent son, Shlomo Zalman, is almost like the opposite. That didn't mean that he also had challenges in chinuch. Every child is, but Menachem was, Menachem probably, yeah, there were doctors, there were psychologists that told us that we should put him on Ritalin and so on. And we thought in the end, it might be an interesting point of reference, is that we thought at the end of the day, if it was difficult, he was difficult at home because he was so rambunctious. But in class, he was still learning and he was still functioning and he was still socially appropriate. And the Rabbeim said that he was okay, then we weren't going to put him on Ritalin. And again, this is anecdotal. I'm not being scientific now. I'm not a professional. And in the classroom, I don't know if this would work in America, but this flu in Eretz Yisrael is at a certain stage, he didn't sit by a desk. He sat by a shtender. And it was well known in the class that he'd rock the shtender back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. That was like a joke in his yearbook that, him rocking the shtender. But he learned as an average 6th, 7th, 8th grader. But he learned. He was an average functional child in the class. What I'm bringing out is a child like that, there's one type of way and that one is mechanich versus a child that's more docile is a different way that one is mechanich. And it's very, very important to recognize that and to react appropriately. Let me just bring out this, and we'll move aside from my son and speak just in general. If you have a child who's active and is a, for lack of a better term, is a doer, someone who's constantly moving and doing and so on, that child is more likely to talk out and to interrupt. And that might be part of an ADHD diagnosis. But at the end of the day, that child is more likely to have a certain part of his personality. And therefore, when the parents react to the child, keeping in mind your child's kochos hanefesh is something that's really, really, really important. Lemaisa, As I mentioned in the past, I think it's something that's really is very important to recognize. Children don't have to be excellent in everything to be successful. And what you do is you find your children's strengths and you build on your children's strengths. And so what you want to do is find where being active and so on is could be funneled in the right direction and be productive and just run with it, as opposed to trying to subjugate it to something else. So an idea would be that work with the child and say, wait a second, maybe a shtender in the classroom would be helpful as opposed to sitting at a desk. Did I mention to you that someone told me that about 20 years ago, there was like this fancy institute in California that developed this fancy ADHD desk for children. And basically, it was a shtender. It was a shtender. They were like selling it for $2,000. It was basically a shtender. So there's a reason why shtenders have appeared in yeshivas for a long time. YU was a lot straighter, and so they're desks and not shtenders. But there's a reason why there are 3,000 shtenders in Mir Yeshiva. So I don't know if Rav Asher Arieli needs one, but at the end of the day, there's a reason why that's so. Okay, so that's in regards to the son. In terms of, I put on the page, the next thing is preparing the ground. In other words, preparing the ground around the children to make sure that they're getting what they need. I emphasized this, I think, already previously, but I can't overemphasize. And I want to skip to, I have the list A through F. I want to skip all the way to F. The more and more we understand ourselves and the type of environment we create around ourselves, and the more that we understand about how we react to situations, the better we're going to be able to create the right environment for our children. So for example, if a person knows that they tend to be a little rigid, so there's nothing wrong with being a little rigid. In fact, being rigid usually comes along with a lot of other very nice midos that a person is mesudar. It does things with, in Hebrew they call it ikfiyut. There are a lot of positive things that come along with rigidity. But of course, it has a downside to it as well. So if you know your house will tend to be a little bit more rigid, then you could sort of in advance think about what will be helpful also based on the child's kochos to be able to deal with that. So the more and more we understand ourselves, the better off we are. There's an uncomfortable thing to talk about today. Two uncomfortable things. One, people is definitely obviously uncomfortable. And then I think is a little uncomfortable because it might be politically incorrect, but we're going to talk about it anyway. What's now politically correct to talk about, which is very uncomfortable, is abuse. And that is that preparing the ground for children is to make sure that our children are protected. Children are resilient and they could go through and thrive in almost all situations. The one thing that a child can't be resilient through is abuse. And that means that we have to do everything we can to make sure that our children are in healthy environments. And abuse, unfortunately, is rampant. It's rampant. It's not only in the context of teachers and authority figures, but abuse actually is most common, particularly sexual abuse is most common, where you have even adolescents who are friendly with kids who they don't even realize the terrible things that they're doing. They could be entirely unaware of how terrible it is. So who your children are hanging around with, what's the best way to deal with abuse, and that is to talk with children when they reach a certain age, that there are certain things that are appropriate and certain things that are inappropriate, starting from the ages of, I would say, 3, 4, or 5, and that if there's someone that makes you feel uncomfortable and so on, that you should speak to Abba and Ima. That's the most important thing. Don't tell them to go to the principal. Don't tell them you're the address. Everything good in your children's life stops and starts with you. One of the great things about Chinuch and Eretz Yisrael, I say, is that the schools don't even claim that they're really doing chinuch for the children. So there's no illusion that the schools are being mechanich the children. I think that's a tremendous bracha. There's absolutely no illusion that there's any real chinuch that's going on. Of course, the schools could be better here, so the point is that everything good in your children's life and all security and all protection starts with you and ends with you as a parent. And therefore, there's only one address, and that's you. And therefore, you sit down with your children every couple of years and never overreact. If a child says something, you process, you're there for them, and so on, and you speak to professionals. And the moment in which there is this open communication and there you consistently reiterate it, there are now some good, when my children were growing up, they didn't have those books, they're now good children's books about, you know what I'm talking about? They have, you know, even Art Scroll has put out books about, I don't know what the titles are, but about appropriate ways that adults interact with children, appropriate ways that adolescents interact with the children. So that's the politically correct thing to talk about. The politically incorrect thing to talk about is friends. And that is that we live in a world that we like to accept everybody and we want our children to get along with everybody, and that's true, but there's such a thing called positive influences and such a thing called negative influences. And now, when there's a negative influence, there has to be a lot of avas Yisrael and chachma about how it's dealt with, but you want to surround your children with positive influences and not negative influences, and that should affect the school that you send your children to. Every once in a while, this is very, very uncomfortable. It could be that there's a school whose hashkafa is more appropriate with your hashkafa, but there are more negative influences for whatever reason in the school. You have to think long and hard. I believe at the end of the day, you want to create the most secure and the healthiest environment for your child. That comes first. And hashkafa, you and your wife, Emir Tzah Hashem, should be mashlam at home. And ultimately, your core, deep children's hashkafas are going to come from you and not from the school. So making sure that they're surrounded by good friends is something that's important. The other side of abuse is talking about sexuality and growth to children when they're growing up. When I was my father, Hareini Kaparis Mishkavo, never spoke to me about sexuality. He never did. I don't think that mahalach is correct today. Whether it was correct 35 years ago or not is a separate question. Yesh Lodun, it could be it was, but today it's clearly not appropriate. At the age of 12, 13, 14, depends on the, obviously a girl, it's a little bit younger. Parents should discuss with children, definitely puberty, to discuss the changing of their bodies and the implications of that, and that they shouldn't be scared, and that they should feel comfortable with themselves, and they should, there are many, many different things. That's a whole shmooze. I did give a shmooze in the shul about discussing puberty with the children. I think I have a recording somewhere, so it'll be my pleasure to discuss it. It's not the main topic right now, but how to discuss puberty with children. You guys are a few years away from that, so I'll give you, Emir Tzah Hashem, a little time. Let the kids grow up a little bit. But that's something that nowadays, sexuality must be discussed by parents with their children. That's preparing children for life. I think once upon a time, I think my father thought that we learned all the Chumash and all the Rashis, and we learned Nashim, Seder Nashim, and he figured that at the end of the day we would piece things together, and through the Chachma of Chazal it would be enough. Nowadays, for both in terms of the fact that the world is and we had a television at home, But there, it was just a totally different type of television and totally different media. That's already ancient television in itself. And so there needs to be direct hadracha from parents to children. We're going to talk about tonight in the Musar Shmuz that one of the hardest things in life is waiting to see positive results from good efforts. And the whole nimshal of Rav Volbe about planting is that you put in a tremendous amount of work in the beginning, But you don't necessarily see the results right away. If you think about it, that's what happens when you plant. When you plant a tree, you put in a tremendous amount of work in the initial stages, and it's not going to produce peros, and you could turn this into a drasha. First you have arla, and then you have netta ravai, and you have all these things before you're going to reach the stage of peros. What we mentioned in the Musar Shemuz tonight is that even harder is that tzadik hatamar yifrach, hatamar is the date tree, its roots grow very, very, very deep into the ground before you see any peros. And so what you want to do is give the children a lot of love and surround them by a lot of good things, and then you have a haftacha. The haftacha is that they're going to turn out well. If there's no abuse in their lives, if you think about the above things that we spoke about, the siyata d'shmaya will be great. Now, will they be the exact same personality as you and your wife? No. Will they have some unique components that might be something that you didn't expect would come from out of you and your wife? Yes. I think all parents go through that. I've definitely gone through that experience in the most positive sense. But that's the beauty of life. The beauty of life is that children are not identical to their parents. But we do our hishtadlus, and you're not going to see the results right away. If a child is struggling with ADHD, the child is not going to become a masmid in 7th and 8th grade, even if you do everything right. It's not going to happen. But if you give them all the support that you can, and you give them the love, and you prepare the ground as we speak about, then my wife, may she be well, you know, is always makbid to say this, the last thing that's left is to daven. And that's it. You daven and you wait. Maybe my wife davens and I wait. But however you break it down, but the most important thing is to really, really daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That brings us to one of Rav Volbi's very, very important points on page Yud Dalet. Rav Volbi points out that therefore Chinuch HaTorah is something that could take time to develop, and you need to hit the timing correctly. Let me say it. I never said it this way before, but I've begun to say this more and more. The goal for your children's chinuch, in my opinion, even pushing past adolescence, let's push towards already young adults. What's the goal? Let's talk about yeshiva. And I'm not talking about only people who are going to be learning in Kollel. I'm talking about raising boys right now as Bnei Torah. Is the goal that your son going to be at age 22 is going to be someone who's quoting all of Shas? Is that the goal? I don't even think, in terms of chinuch, in my mind, the goal is not what they're going to be by age 22. The goal is what they're going to be by age 40. And therefore, you need a lot of waiting and you need a lot of davening. So what I'm bringing out is that, in my opinion, the best chinuch systems are not the ones that stuff the children with a lot of Torah. And the children are spilling out a lot of Torah. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. But the question is, where are the kids going to be the best adults possible? Remember, we spoke about chinuch, is lahaschil es hayeled, to bring the yelad into his avoda. That's the goal. Chinuch is not about stuffing them with a lot of Torah. Chinuch is, what type of adult are they going to be? What type of ben Torah are they going to be when they're 30 years old? I'm less impressed. If at age 23, you and I might be in the same predicament at age 23. If at age 23 we don't know Shas, it's okay. You know, it's not... Are you heading in the right direction? Where are you going? Where are you going in terms of your midos? Where are you going in terms of what type of ben Torah you are? That's something that's much more important. So Rav Volbi points out in page Yud Dalet, so then there's something about being mechanech a child too early. Too early. It's possible to be mechanech them too early. And that could also have a negative effect. Now, so therefore, the introduction to Avodas Hashem is one that has to be gradual and appropriate at each stage. What does that mean? So there are two things that I want to speak about being appropriate at each stage. First, I want to talk about learning Torah and excelling in Torah. And I want to use that to expand and talk on a broader level about rewards and punishment, positive reinforcement. And I also want to talk about how it relates to a child's perception, not only of Torah, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. So first let's start Torah, and then ultimately we'll talk about a child's perception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Rambam writes, in Shmona Prakim, the Rambam writes that he asks a kasha. He says, Olam Haba is described in different ways in Chazal. Sometimes Olam Haba is described as having a good meal, a place with a good meal. So the Rambam says, Chazal spoke in different terms, depending on the person, the age of the individual they were talking to, and even the intellectual place that the individual... I would imagine Rav Ben Arsh has made reference to this in the Hashkafa Shiur. And that is that the Rambam says, Chazal talk about the idea that when you're giving incentive to a child at age 6, it's very, very different than the incentive that you give a child when they're at age 12, which is different than the incentive you give a child at age 16, which is different than the incentive that you adolescent at 16, which is different than the incentive at 20, which would be different than the incentive at age 40. In other words, Chanoch Lenar al pi darko is not only in terms of the messages, but also in terms of the positive reinforcement. So, of course, the Rambam says that at age 6, you offer them a lollipop. At age 12, you offer them either baseball cards or gedolim cards, one of the two. But some type of collecting thing. At age 16, it's something else, and at age 20, it's something else. Because children do need incentive. There's nothing wrong for creating incentive for children. One of the things that I tell children when I give them a candy is I say, Torah is sweet. There's nothing wrong creating the association that Torah is sweet. And that's something you want to convey to a child already at a young age, that Torah is sweet. But it has to be appropriate for the child at that particular age. The goal, of course, is that to eventually the sweetness become, that association become, which so embedded in the child, as the Rambam describes, that the Chachma of Torah itself becomes so meaningful that if the child has been surrounded by positive influences and so on, then that experience of Torah itself, the joy of Chachmas HaTorah, will become one with the child. And I don't have the time now to elaborate how that progression takes place, and we're not talking about that right now. We're really talking about younger children. So I want to emphasize, though, that at the chinuch of incentives is appropriate. There's nothing wrong with it, but the incentives also need to be done in an appropriate way. Now, there's a famous kasha. And the kasha is, what is the difference between a bribe and a reward? Dahainu. That if the Rambam himself alludes to the fact that Chazal used the concept of rewards, the idea of giving incentives for children is a good thing. There are some modern people out there who say that incentives are not appropriate. The Masorah that I have is that, no, incentives are appropriate. Bribing is inappropriate. So Rabbi said, what's the lumdus? What's the difference between a bribe and a reward? The difference is actually in the formulation itself. What's the goal? A bribe is the following. If you do such and such, if you clean up your room, then I'll give you a candy. The goal then is the candy. What would be a reward? I will reward you with a candy if you clean up your room. The nafkamina between the two things is It's clear what the goal is. The Torah is sweet. I'm giving this to you because Torah is sweet, not because this is sweet. The goal is clear. The goal is Torah. The goal is the clean room. I'm giving you the reward as an incentive because I want to encourage you to reach that place. The parent is extolling the value of a clean room, is extolling the value of learning Torah by showing that I think you deserve something positive. In contrast to the bribe, where the bribe is that the goal becomes the candy itself. The difference, of course, lays in the fact that when the parent is bribing the child, then it's as if the parent is trying to get something out themselves for it. They're trying to get the clean room. But what the child is really getting is the candy. Here, I'm telling you, you're really getting the Torah. You're really getting the room. I understand that you as a child yet, you can't appreciate it. That's the difference between a bribe and a reward. So when it comes to Torah, the goal is to create that association with the sweetness. The goal is to encourage children. And here's a very, very important rule. Success breeds success. When a child feels that they're accomplishing, then ultimately they'll feel good from the sense of accomplishment itself. B'chanoch l'nar al pidarko. The worst is when the bar is set too high and the child doesn't feel success. So if you ever have a safek, halacha l'maisa, chinuch halacha l'maisa, if you ever have a safek of whether what the bar is, always set it a little lower, because you could always make it a little higher. But if you set it too high, and the child doesn't feel that success, so then in such a case, then it's definitely violating what Revolbi describes here on page Yudalid and Tezvav. A little bit more nuance in terms of the rewards. Here, Sarah Hannah Radcliffe has what she calls the clear method. You take a look on page 25, 29, and 30. She's speaking about reward, but she's pointing that there is also a way to positively reinforce, and that's what she calls the clear method. C is to comment, L is to label, and R is reward. This is, she anticipated the texting generation where clear would be spelled C-L-R. So she says as follows, the best way to reward is not just to simply to reward, but to create a context. So for example, let's say, page 30, let's say a child has trouble waiting patiently for mother in the bank. He tends to run all over the place creating havoc. The inner compassionate parent has made note of the problem and devised a parenting plan using the clear method. The next time mom goes to the bank, she's all ready. 2 minutes after arriving, before trouble has started, mom catches Junior being so far so good quiet. Clear. C. Mom comments, I see you're waiting quietly. So she's commenting, and here is a very, very important part. L. Labels. In brisk, this will be a chaloy shame. She creates a chaloy shame over here. But this is really important. Brisk is right. It's a chaloy shame. That's very patient of you. In other words, she labels what she's going to give the reward for. I think that deserves a candy. By the way, the ish emes in me doesn't like which I just happen to have in my purse. It's not that she just had. You don't have to say which I just have. She doesn't need to say that. I think that deserves a candy that I have in my purse. It shouldn't insinuate that I just. Okay. But anyhow, so it's commenting, labeling, and then the reward. So what's happening is that the child is getting a very, very clear hadracha of what happens. Now, in the inverse, when this happens, it actually is tragic. When the child is punished, the negative reinforcement, and the child is not sure why they're being punished. So that's even worse than giving a reward where the child... And so if there's a need for a timeout, the child has to know why the timeout. And of course, many of you will ask me, and I don't always have the perfect answer. I'm zocha to be talking now to parents with children that are two years old, 3 years old, some who are still age one. So when is a child capable of processing what exactly it is. But here I might not have the exact details to answer that question now. But the yesod, I think, is very, very clear. And that is, if your child is too young to understand why they got the timeout, then the timeout doesn't work. If it's going to be missing in the clear method, then wait. Chanoch l'nar al pi darko. You know, one of my children, I'll go back to one of my children as opposed to a specific one. One of my children once took, we were in the store, and we went out of the store and realized they had candy in their hands. So I was calm on the outside, but I was freaking out. And my wife said to me, Chaim, you're already imagining visiting this child in jail. Chas v'chalila, chas v'chalila. Like the child had no asaga. You know, there's a candy. Could be the child was too young. Their moral compass at that particular time wasn't ready to know. You know that. But in my mind, they're already bank robbers. You know, so. And the point is, chas v'chalila, that's why always overreact or underreact. What's the yisod? Underreact. Always underreact. Never overreact. Ever mesupik, right? We're having these sveikos. So this is another one of those sveikos. If we have a suffik, always underreact. Don't overreact. So now, why am I mentioning this story now in terms of if you're not capable of giving something very clear to the child, of defining to the child what to comment and then to label exactly and then to give the positive or negative reinforcement, then don't do it at all. And sometimes the child is too young, and that comes back to the Chanoch Lenar Al Pi Darko piece. Okay, so that's in regards to positive and negative reinforcement in regards to Torah, about morality, moral and ethical behavior in general. You want to keep it as clear as possible, and there is times that where the negative reinforcement is going to be clear, then that's okay. For example, if a child did something that was clearly problematic, and the child's at the stage it could really understand that it's not appropriate to take, let's say a 5-year-old, 6-year-old takes away the toy of another sibling, it's okay if you comment and you label, and then in such a case the reinforcement here is the negative reinforcement that you won't get Shabbos party. By the way, taking away Shabbos party from a child, even one thing of Shabbos party, that's a big, big deal. In other words, to do negative reinforcement, you don't need a lot. If you're finding that you're needing to do a lot, then there's something probably wrong in the negative reinforcement. You don't have to do a lot to create the context in which a child doesn't want to do these negative behaviors. By the way, if you're not getting it perfect, don't worry. I also didn't get it perfect, you know. But the children could still b'siyata d'shmaya come out okay. There's a learning process, a learning curve. But the truth is, if you're not getting those quote unquote positive results, you're not seeing any changes, then it's probably not that the negative reinforcement is not strong enough. It's probably something wrong in the clear method that we're doing. Dr. Radcliffe has another point over here, which is really, really, really important. Let's go to the next one. Junior is delighted, of course, because he got his candy. He finds it easier to wait for the next few minutes. Notice the positive discipline sequence. C, comment. Name a specific appropriate behavior. You listen to mommy right away. Label, using a positive label that describes the kind of person. Now, if the parent does comments and then labels, then they label even creating a haloshem on the child, saying that you're a good listener. By the way, this is a little bit of a machloikis achroinim, whether this is right, whether to label them as their identity, because you will not do the inverse in negative behavior. You won't say, if the child hits somebody, you won't say you're a fighting child or you're a violent child. That wouldn't be the word you would use with a child. But you would never label when a child does something negative, never turn them into that label. According to Dr. Radcliffe, you can go in the other direction. You can say that you're a good listener. And I'm noted towards Hershey. There's some people who say you should never label the child for anything. If it's specific, then it's good. If it's not specific, then it's not. I know an adult that says that they were always told as a child that they were a good child, but they never knew why they were a good child. So that they found the very confusing as they grew up. So here, it's much more, not just you're a good kid, but something specific. You're a good listener. So we could go with her nusach. That makes sense. And notice this, the reward. The reward is, I think that deserves a big hug and kiss. The greatest reward that a parent could give a child is their love and affirmation. That's the greatest gift. So the most, you want to give a lot of positive reinforcement that's not revolving around candy and so on and so forth, even though the Rambam says there is a value. But what you want to do is create a sense of when a child does something good, positive, even small, that they have, that they get affirmation from you. Now, this is not so sir, the idea of unconditional love. Unconditional love means that the child knows that you will always give them security and support no matter what, whether they're good or whether they're bad. But to give an added hug, an added kiss, that is really the ultimate reward. Which brings us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we're out of time. So remind me, they joke in the Beis Medrash, there was a ger that once came into a Beis Medrash when he was a Gentile. Ultimately, he fell in love with Yadus. But he was fascinated. He went over to one chavrusa and they were talking about a woman's menstrual cycle. Another chavrusa was talking about cutting vegetables on Shabbos. Another chavrusa is talking about ox goring. He said they spoke about everything in life, everything on the universe. The only thing they weren't talking about was God himself. And he was very, very intrigued about that. They talk about everything except God himself. So sometimes in our yeshivas we do that too well, that we don't even talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But there, by the way, there's a fascinating yisod that dovetails beautifully with Rav Soloveitchik's Halachic Man, etc., etc. That's an anecdote that really is like should be on the back of Halachic Man. But and there's something very, very beautiful about it, but eventually we have to talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So remind me that where we're up to, I'm sort of in between in our curriculum, between number 3 and number 4, remind me that I want to talk about this idea that a parent's affirmation for a child in their love is very, very important also in terms of developing a parent's sense of God and their relationship with God. That's a yisod from Rav Noach Weinberg that we'll pick up with Emir Tzeh Hashem next time. You familiar, Shlomo, what I'm referring to?
Oh, really?
Wow. Ooh.